Okay, welcome to our call. Great to have you here. This is our weekly Friends and Family Health Coaching call. And it is a friends and family call. Nothing's going to be sold, nothing to sign up for. It's just a friendly call to provide information to help you and the people you love make good decisions about your health and life and decide for yourself what's best for you. So my name is Dr. Ron Janer. I'm a naturopathic physician. I have diplomates in acupuncture and addiction and compulsive disorder therapy. I've known Brother Finchu for some 30 years and respect him and have learned a lot from him over the years. And it's a real privilege to be asked to substitute for him today and to begin talking about health coaching. So just a brief review of some of the things we've already talked about on the call. First, what health coaching isn't. Health coaching is not being the doctor. A doctor is like, in some respects, not to disrespect doctors, but it's something like being an auto mechanic. You get an auto mechanic to do things that you can't do for yourself. So if you go get brain surgery, you're having someone do something for you that you can't do for yourself. And that's the essence of the modern definition of a physician, is someone who can provide therapy or expertise that you may not personally have. Now, the second function that we often look for from a doctor is that of a teacher. And a good doctor is also a good mentor and trainer and teacher. And that's actually the original meaning of the word physician, is to be a teacher. But a teacher or an educator or a parent will teach you what to do or tell you what to do and guide you through that process. A coach is neither a physician who does it for you, nor a teacher or mentor who tells you what to do. In fact, a coach serves a very different function. Coaches are there to help you get clarity so that you can make your own decisions about things that you choose to do for yourself. So coaching is different from being a doctor. It's different from being a teacher. And while there might be in any given individual some overlap between the two, for example, in my work, I at different times perform all three functions. I function as a therapist. In certain situations, I do teaching and mentoring in other situations, and I also really enjoy the coaching process. In fact, I know Rosas Minchu and myself have both come to love that part of the healing system very, very much, because that's the part that honors you and helps you to make decisions for yourself, and then helps you to find the motivation within yourself to do those things that are best for you and that work for you in your life. So that's what coaching is. Coaching is not doing it for you. Coaching is not necessarily telling you what to do. In fact, coaching is about helping you make a decision about what works best for you, and then at the same time helping you find a way to motivate yourself. Sometimes we think of coaches, like in football, motivating the players. And it's true, there are screamers and hollers in the coaching world who provide external motivation to get their charges to perform better. But the very, very best coaches are those that can help you to motivate yourself. Because if you really, really want it, if it's what you want and what you choose for your life, and you really have a strong desire for it, then you're the one that's going to be able to accomplish more than anything that anybody else outside of you would provide for you. So that's what this call is about. It's about this whole process of coaching, whether or not you are here to learn how to be coached, or perhaps you are a coach or would like to become a coach, then these calls are a great introduction to the process and how it works, and hopefully you'll get some great ideas about what you can do. First of all, to coach yourself, that's the best place to start, and then if you choose to help coach others. For example, parents end up coaching their children. It's kind of like the growth process. A very small child, an infant, say it's the first 2 or 3 years, is mostly dependent on the parent to do everything for them. That's kind of like the physician role. And then as they grow, you spend more and more time as a teacher, training them in things that they can do, and teaching them what they can do and what they can't do. That's the teacher, educator, mentor role. And then as they become teenagers, especially, and start practicing on adulthood, you get a little bit more into the coaching role, because at some point, you want them to get to the point where they can make good decisions for themselves and motivate themselves to act appropriately, whether you're there looking over their shoulders or not. So this is actually a very natural process. All three of these processes, the doctor-physician process, and those who the teacher teaching process, and then also the process by which you coach the person so that they can make decisions for themselves. So the first thing that's necessary, if you're going to make decisions for yourself, is to decide what it is you want. What do you choose for yourself? What is there in your life that you'd like to see change? And that's actually the theme of the call this evening, is what about change? How do you get the changes? How do you decide what changes? And how would you produce these changes in a way that would be useful for you? So what do you want to see change in your life? What would you like to see that's different? And one of the ways to do that is just get a sheet of paper and just start writing things down. In fact, you might even want to take a moment and do that right now. Just take a piece of paper and just start listing some of the things that you would want to have in your life or see change in your life, or what would you choose for yourself if you could. And just take a moment and write a few things down. And that's a great place to start. Writing is a wonderful way to get your body to function in a better way, and get your mind to function in a way so that you can understand and follow the processes and come up with something that works for you. So start just making lists. A great place to start is just make a list. In fact, there's an interesting exercise you can do, which is to get a plain sheet of paper and then start with this question. Don't limit yourself at all, because this is about opening up possibilities. So maybe you already know that there are some things you'd like to change. Maybe you're in that pre-contemplative state that we talked about last week, and you know you'd like change, but you're not really sure what the change would be. So a cool exercise to start with is just write this sentence. If I had unlimited resources, all the money I could ever want, and perfect health, what would I do with it? Now, maybe that's not your actual situation right now, but the purpose of the exercise is just to expand your thinking, expand your reality, so that you can be open to the changes that you would like to choose for yourself. So periodically, maybe once a month or every few weeks, just sit down with a piece of paper and say, if I had $100 million in the bank or $100 million a year in income and perfect health, what would I be doing with it? And then just start writing. And write and write and write everything you can think of so you fill up two or three sheets of paper. Now, what's interesting about this exercise is most people, the first time they do it, write down two or three or four things, maybe half a dozen things, and they kind of hit a wall. That's what we're looking for. And you think that if you had all that money and all your health and years of opportunity to use it, you could come up with a lot of stuff. But the fact is that something blocks us usually when we first do the exercise. And most people are very surprised to find they write down three or four things. You know, I want to get a new car, I'm going to get a new house, I'm going to buy a house for my folks. And all of a sudden it gets slow. You start slowing down and it gets a little harder to write things. Why is that? Well, it's because we're not in the habit of making choices. And making choices and choosing what you really want is a function which the body doesn't always have a lot of experience with. Now, we might think we get to choose a lot. We choose chocolate versus vanilla ice cream, or we choose which way we want to drive to work. But the reality is the vast majority of things that we do as humans, and we talked about that in the very first call, or the first couple of calls, most of what we do as humans, we do out of habit. And in fact, depending on what study you look at or what research or what experience you've had, the average is for people to say, well, 60 to 80% of what people do is habit. And in fact, in neurophysiology, there's people that actually believe the number's way higher than that. And the fact is, one of the factors is, the more stress you have in your life, actually the more things you do out of habit. The more stress the body gets, the more it will tend to follow habits instead of coming up with new ideas. Until you reach that point, what I call the grizzly bear experience, which we talked about in an earlier call, where you feel like you're being chased by a grizzly bear. And when you get to that point, you're drowning, you feel like you're being chased by a bear or a lion, literally all of your choice-making comes down to just, how do I get away from this bear? and all the other possibilities in your life, all the other things that even your body might want to work on, like how to digest your lunch, or how to fix a cold, or a sprained ankle, or even whether or not you might die of cancer in 5 years, all of those things go out the window because the body follows a habit called the survival coping mechanism. And that survival coping mechanism has nothing to do with thinking. It has everything to do with the body just trying to stay alive. And that's why you get situations like people that are drowning that will actually knock out the lifeguard and crawl over the lifeguard and drown him trying to get out of the water. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Of course not, because the thinking part of your brain isn't even active at that point. What you have at that point is nothing more than survival instinct. How much stress do you have in your life? And remember, the body itself determines stress not based on how many bad things have happened lately. To the body, stress is anything the body has to adjust to. So interestingly, the body will find, even if you get a new job and you have enough money to buy a brand new house, but it's in another city 500 miles away or 1,000 miles away, the body's going to find that to be very, very stressful. There's a lot of changes involved, even though the overall end result should be pretty good for you. So the body defines stress as how much adaptation to change do I have to make. So one of the factors you run into when you start making your list of what do I want to choose for my life, or what would I do if I had all these resources, is that the body actually doesn't like making those kinds of big changes. So one of the things we have to work with, or we might choose to work with, is how do we break through that? How do we get the body to actually be comfortable with the idea that we could change? Well, one of the ways to do it is with the exercise we just gave. You get a clean sheet of paper, you get a pen, and write that if I had $100 million a year in tax-free income, and I had all my health, and decades more to live, what would I be doing with all those resources? And you just start writing. And you, at first, yeah, there's a house and a car and, a vacation in Yellowstone or in France or the South Pacific. And you go and come up with all the things you'd like to do for yourself. And then maybe you start thinking about things you'd like to do for other people. Maybe you'd be donating money to help build schools so more people can learn to read and write. Or maybe it's to support some hospital program or a clinic you believe in. Or maybe it's to set up a shelter for abused women and children so they get the support they require. What would you do if you had all that money? Now, whether or not you ever actually have that much money and those opportunities, what you're doing by doing the exercise is you're helping the body to get used to the idea that there are possibilities and there are changes that can occur, and it's okay to think about it. Now when you come back after doing that exercise a few times, you come back and start working on the one we gave everybody the last couple of sessions, which is just make a list of what you'd really like to change in your life. One of the things that you would like to see that are different, maybe with regard to your health, with regard to relationships, with regard to your finances and your work, what would you like to change? And just make a list. And it's interesting that after doing the other exercise, this one's a lot easier. And it's a lot easier to write down things that in a practical way you'd really like to see change in your life. But even then, there might be some hesitation. There might be difficulty in thinking and what do I really want. And again, what's happening is those habit patterns, especially under stress, are impeding your ability to see possibilities. The more stress you've been in your life, and again, stress is lots of changes, not just bad things, but the more stress you've had in your life, the fewer possibilities that your nervous system are able to come up with. And again, let me explain that another way. If you're chased by the grizzly bear, and those of you that have listened to me talk before, you know I talk a lot about grizzly bears and two-year-olds. Because everything that I've learned about neurophysiology of stress and healing, I can explain with an illustration about a grizzly bear or a two-year-old. So we'll see how that works out tonight. So if you were really chased by a grizzly bear, as you already mentioned, what would be the only thing you're thinking about? Okay, so the only thing you're going to think about is getting away from that bear. And it might not even be a lot of logical thinking involved. It might be just a panic-stricken run or fighting for your life if the bear catches up with you, but it may not be something well thought out, okay? But you'll only think of one thing. Now, if you were walking in the park with your family and it's perfectly relaxed and there's no bears around, and there never have been and there never will be, then what do you think about? And you're listening to the kids chatter, you're thinking about what you're going to have for dinner, you're looking at the squirrels, you hear the wind in the trees, you notice the beautiful sunset. Look at all the different things that are going through your head when you're in a relaxed mode and walking through the park. That's when people can be creative. Relaxation and play is the creative energy. Just locks you down to just one or two possibilities because all your body can pay attention to is the stress. Does that make sense? Hope so. But that's how it works. So the more stressed you've been in your life, the more likely it is that when we ask you to make that initial list of what are the things that you choose to change in your life, you may not even find that it's that easy to write things. Maybe there's a few things you know right away. I wish this was different, this was different, this was different. But then sometimes we just don't see possibilities for changing, or the first thought that pops up, well, I'd like to change this, but I don't see any way that could ever change. So that's the restriction of possibilities that occurs from being in the habit of being stressed. And here's an interesting aspect of this that even a lot of doctors don't know about, and I know that because I teach doctors, and when I train them and give lectures, I always ask them, as I do all my clients and lay people I teach, is that if you really were in a grizzly bear experience, you really were chased by a bear or a lion, you get away and you're safe. But now you're back safe at home, everything's okay, but you were just chased by a grizzly bear. How long do you think it takes your body to reset itself back to where it was before you had the grizzly bear experience? Okay. What do you think? Interestingly, when I ask physicians this question, most commonly they'll say, oh, a couple hours, maybe a few days, maybe a few weeks. But when I ask lay people, they tend to say a little longer, maybe a few weeks, a few months. Once in a while, I get somebody who actually has some inkling of the real answer, and they'll say, oh boy, it takes me a long time. When you check out the research in neurophysiology of stress, you find out that the average, unless you have specialized therapy or training, the average amount of time for your body to reset itself after one severely stressful experience is 2 to 10 years. Wow. So now my question for you is, how many two-year periods do you remember in your life, especially the last 2 years, but any two-year period in your life, when you only had one stressful thing happen on one day out of that 2 years? And as soon as everybody stops laughing and the giggling dies down, because most of us have, that just is crazy, because most of our lives we've had way more than one stressful thing happen every 2 years. And in fact, we have multiple things that happen that are very, very stressful in most cases. And many of those stresses, things like trying to pay bills when you have a family, or losing a job, or a chronic illness, they're not just one event like a grizzly bear getting chasing you. They're things that go on for days and weeks and months, and your body's trying to cope with all the changes and all the stress of these situations. So how many of these stresses have built up in your body? And remember, with even just one of these stresses, you impair your ability to see possibilities and make choices. The body, the more stress the body's under, the more it hunkers down into its habit pattern. And in fact, you will hang on to even a bad habit pattern if in some way it gives you comfort from your stress. And that's where I studied the addiction and the compulsive disorder therapies. How many people continue to smoke because it gives them kind of a happy feeling or makes them feel a little better, even when they know it's bad for them, even then when they know they're cutting their life short, but they keep doing it? Why? Well, I'm so stressed I can't stop. As with any other addiction, people who drink too much, some of us eat too much. Maybe we grew up in a home where people didn't use drugs or alcohol to excess, but maybe it was okay to eat, and that was the pleasure thing for the family. That was the time when everybody was a little calmer and having a little more fun. So now you're later in life and you get stressed out, what do? I want a hot sex Sunday. It makes me feel good. I know it's not good for me, but why do we keep doing it? Because when you're under stress, your body loses the ability to make choices about more possibilities, and it actually just wants to do anything over and over and over again that makes it feel a little bit more comfortable. And sometimes that little bit more comfortable is just the habit of doing it, even if it's a bad habit. How many of us have known a friend or even a family member who is in a really dysfunctional, even an abusive relationship, and after working with a counselor, or after having been going to the hospital, whatever it is, whatever crisis, they get them out, and they get them into a situation where they're safe, maybe in a shelter or whatever. What do? When they get out of the shelter? Sometimes even before they're supposed to leave, they go right back into the other situation, the one that was abusive. Why? Because the body would rather stay where it's at and stay in those habit patterns under stress because it knows what it's like. It knows what to do. And the body would rather stay in a habit pattern than it would try to consider other possibilities where you really don't know what's going to happen. And it takes a lot of effort to change habits. It takes a lot of effort to change life patterns. And so this is some of the things that start popping up when you do your very first exercise in our coaching process, which is just make a list of the things you'd like to change in your life. And maybe you look at them and you say, oh, I can never do that. I'd like to, but I can never do that. Or you can't even think of something different because the body is so locked up in the habit patterns of the past. And note that we mentioned that those habit patterns of the past are cumulative. If you've had more than one severe stress in a 2-year period, if you've had severe stress that continues for weeks and months and maybe even years, if you've had stresses that piled on top of each other, then somewhere in your nervous system, your non-cognitive, what we used to call the non-conscious nervous system, is running those stress programs 24/7. You may not even be cognitively aware of them. Because what happens when you learn a new habit? Let's say you get a new job, you move to a new town, you've got to figure out how to get to work from the new house, and the first few days, first few weeks, you've got to follow directions, you've got to pay attention, or you get lost. But after a few weeks, you're driving, listening to the radio, talking on your cell phone, hope not, but you might be talking on your cell phone, combing your hair, doing all these things, and boom, you're there. And how did you get there? How could you do something as complicated as driving a car in traffic and end up where you're going without even cognitively being aware of what you're doing? That's how powerful a habit is. And that's not even a life and death survival habit. That's a habit that's just a behavioral habit, not a huge amount of stress involved. Maybe there's a little bit of stress because you want to be at work on time and you want to make sure you don't get lost in the first week or two. But you're not talking about life and death. You're not going to be shot or put in prison if you don't show up at work on time, you see. What if that habit is implanted? The point is that after a few weeks, you can do it and not think about it. It's running on its own. Now, what if that habit is a survival pattern? Maybe you're in that abusive relationship, and in order to avoid being abused, you have certain behaviors that are not really good for you, but you do them either to avoid abuse or to make you feel better after the abuse, like getting drunk. Right? Now that habit pattern, well, after a period of time, also becomes an unconscious program. You do it even if you're not thinking about it. It's just the way you live, the way you deal with it. But now it's wired that much deeper into your nervous system. In fact, in the compulsive disorder therapy, they talk about the midbrain where the body stores survival mechanisms, and that's where addiction and compulsive disorders are wired. In other words, any behavior that you habitually do to deal with severe stress gets wired into the brain in a survival section, which is the same place where the body fights to stay alive as you're drowning. So it's not the part of the brain, by the way, where you think, or where you figure things out, or where you have any kind of sense of possibilities for change. That's the frontal lobe and the cortex of the brain. This information, these core survival habits or coping mechanisms, are stored so deep down in the midbrain that they're in an area where you don't think, you just react. And you react without thinking. And just as a note, that's why it's so puzzling to those of us who are not addicted to something like heroin, why a dearly beloved family member would rather steal money from us or grandma and go out and buy heroin than deal with their problems or accept the help that we give them to deal with them, but they go for that. When they're under stress, they go for the heroin. They go for the alcohol. The reason is it's not in the thinking part of the brain. It's not in the part of the brain where we have character and make character, moral, ethical choices, character-based moral and ethical choices. It's in a part of the brain where we just react trying to stay alive without even thinking about it. Now, how hard do you think it is to change something like that? If you've been under stress, then some of the behavioral habits that limit your ability to perceive choices and choose possibilities are buried in that part of the brain. Now what are you going to do? So if you go to make your list of what would you like to change, and you either feel like the things you're writing are impossible, or you can't even think of things. You know you'd like to have some change in your life, but you can't even think of what those changes might be. Then probably you've got these survival stress mechanisms running at the non-conscious level. You're not doing it on purpose. It's just running like a habit, just like you breathe. But it inhibits your ability to make choices. And some of the people I've worked with and studied with actually believe that instead of the 60 to 80% habit patterns that might be normal in a healthy person, someone who's been severely stressed may have 90, 95%, 98% or more of their behavior is running in those deeply entrenched habit patterns, especially the survivor coping ones. So now what are you going to do? How do you change those things? Well, there's several different strategies we can use. One is continue to work with the exercises we already did today. If once a week you do the exercise of, if I had $100 million a year coming in and I was perfectly healthy and I had lots of time, what would I be doing with it? What that does is it starts opening up some of the awareness for possibilities for change. And it gets the mind to imagining things and creating things, even in a playful way, because play is the creative energy. And would you be doing an activity like that if you were being chased by a bear? Well, of course not. So doing things that trigger other mechanisms in the body besides the run from the bear energy can actually help kind of exercise those muscles. And then when you go to make your list, what are the things you'd like to change, you'll find it's a little bit easier because you've exercised those muscles that have to do with choice, that have to do with making a decision about what I'd like to do next. So that's one of the things you can do. Another is to practice relaxation. So just being thinking calming thoughts, taking a deep breath, letting it out slow, and acting, moving, and breathing in a way different than the way you would do it if you were being chased by a bear. Because if you're being chased by the bear, all you're doing is huffing and puffing and trying to get away from the bear. You're not being calm. You're not breathing slowly and deeply. You're not thinking about pleasant things. The other thing that's kind of interesting, based on what we talked about earlier, when you run from the bear, you only think of one thing at a time, which is, of course, the bear. So one of the little tricks you can use is to take a breath, and then look around you and notice five things. It doesn't have to be anything big, but what color shirt do you have on? What color is the wall painted in the room where you are? What's the temperature of the room? What color is the carpet? Is there anybody else in the room with you? And maybe look at a lamp or a figurine setting somewhere in the room where you are. But just notice five things in your environment. Taking a calm breath, a calm deep breath, and then noticing five things around you automatically begins to tell the body that you're not being chased by a bear, and it'll start to calm down, and it will begin to think of other possibilities that it can't think of when it's totally focused on the bear. So how do you learn a new habit? We've all tried to break habits. It's not too easy, is it? But the way you can change a habit is by creating a new one. And this is probably one of the neatest things about this work. It's also one of the more challenging, to be real honest, because the way the body learns habits is by practice. So any of the things that Dr. Minshew or myself talk about on these calls, that you find that you think, hey, that might work for me. That makes sense. Let me try that. It's great if you do it once or twice, and it will help you a little bit because all of these things are designed based on how the neurophysiology of the body actually works and how our minds and our bodies process emotions and feelings and so forth. However, if you want to get a long-term benefit, that's where we get our coaching function. The coach is there not only to help you be aware and to make your own choices about what you would like to change in your life, but also to encourage you to motivate yourself to actually do things that will help to bring those changes to fruition, bring them into actualization in your physical world. And that means some practice. So let's say you wanted to learn to play the piano, and you, of course, couldn't before. If you went to play the piano, you'd get a teacher. Does the teacher just sit and play the piano for you every time you have a lesson, and that's how you learn to play the piano? Nope. If the teacher gives you a video of someone playing the piano, or gives you a book about it, and you actually watch the video and read the book, now you are a good piano player. Sorry. The only way you'll ever learn to be a great piano player, even a halfway decent one, is you've got to practice. Anything that involves your body requires practice. Athletes know about a term called muscle memory, where they practice a movement in their sport until they say the muscles have memorized it, and it just happens automatically whether they're doing it deliberately or not. That's actually very important, even in this, because the more you practice doing things that help you to create new behaviors and habits in your life, then as your body gets more and more comfortable with them and memorizes them, then it will actually begin to do it on its own. So practicing the things we talk about on these calls is really the key. So some of the exercises, you might have done them once. Maybe you made your list last week or the week before of things you wanted to change in your life. You might even have gotten to the next step about column A, B, and C, the things that you really, really want, the things that you kind of want, and the things that you will be okay if it happens, but if it doesn't, that's okay too. So you kind of split it up according to priority. However, if you will repeat those exercises once a week, couple times a week, you'll find that it gets easier and easier, and the body begins to create strategies and possibilities for ways that you can actually accomplish those things. And one of the functions of a coach, just like with that piano teacher, they may show you a few things, but really they're there to motivate you to practice in between her visits, so that when you're there, she can see your progress and then maybe teach you a new technique or something. But if she can't motivate you or help you to motivate yourself, which is even better, to want to do a little bit of practice every day, the odds are you'll never become very much of a piano player. So that's the same with coaching when it comes to health and wellness. Health and wellness have to do with behaviors. They have to do with the way we function in life. And those behaviors in the body function mostly out of habit. And unless you practice them enough to actually create new habits and then keep them going, it's not going to happen too well. It's going to be difficult. What else could you use to help you overcome that inertia in the human body to change, especially when you've been under a lot of stress in your life? One of the things you can do is ask questions. Questions are really valuable for opening up possibilities and helping you create choice in your life. But it requires a certain type of question. Most of us ask a question to get a specific answer. This is a little different. This is asking a question to open up possibilities. So the kind of questions that help your body to create new possibilities are questions like, I wonder what it would take for my life to be different. A question like, what else is possible? A question like, I wonder how it would get better than this. And you can use that one whether things are going well or not going well. It's always good to have them better. Now, understand that when you ask these kinds of questions, you're not necessarily looking for an answer right away. What you're doing is kind of asking your body or your nervous system, what other possibilities are there here? And then just let it work on it a little bit. So you're not looking for an answer right away. You're just going to be quiet and let the possibilities sort themselves in your nervous system. Because the first thing is, when you ask your body in a calm way, well, what else is possible? then you're certainly not running from the bear in that moment, because that isn't what you'd be doing when you're running from the bear. A little more panicky in that situation. But you're allowing yourself to create possibilities for change. And then what you want to pay attention to, if you choose, when you ask these questions, is not the cognitive answer. Because the cognitive answer that does come up right away may be the one coming out of the habit pattern. You're looking for other possibilities. What you do want to notice, though, is how you feel after you ask the question. Do you feel excited because there might be other possibilities? Do you feel frustrated? Do you feel depressed because you don't think anything will ever change in your life? Notice the feeling. Why is that more important than the cognitive answer that you might get? Because the body, in the same way that the body functions out of habit, the body communicates in a different way than our mind does. Our mind likes to look at facts and evaluate information and make a decision based on those facts and that information, hopefully logically, but not always. But at least it's looking at information and making a decision. The body doesn't really do it that way. The body tends to run these memorized programs based on how you feel. And because the body can only live in the here and now, understand your mind can go anywhere. You can remember the past, you can imagine the future, you can go to a movie or read a book about something that never even happened and get all involved in it. The mind can go anywhere in time and space. But the body has to stay here right now. Try to raise your right hand at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon right now. Can't do it, can you? What about patting yourself on the tummy at 2 o'clock yesterday, right now? Can't do it. Body has to stay right here, right now. So one of the ways you can learn to communicate better with your body and know whether or not these habit patterns are serving you or whether you've learned habits that don't serve you is to ask these questions, like what else is possible, how does it get better, what would it take for this to change, and notice how you feel after you ask the question. Why? Because the body communicates with feelings. The way you, one of the three main ways it communicates, in fact. The body communicates with feelings and emotions, body symptoms and sensations, and it also communicates and reacts to pictures that we have, especially if they contain an emotional component. So the body is paying attention to the emotion of what you're thinking, and it also then exaggerates and creates emotion based on the memory patterns that are actually stored in your body. One of the great discoveries in neuromedicine in the last 30 years is that most of emotional memory is stored not in your brain or in your mind, it's stored in your body. And that's why you can get a massage and start crying, or why you have that gut instinct or butterflies in your stomach when you're trying to do something or getting ready for a talk like I was tonight. So most of the neurotransmitters and neuropeptides and neurochemicals and circuits that handle emotion are actually in your body, including the emotions connected to memory. So when you ask a question that asks for more possibilities in your life, your body will look at that question and it will react with a feeling, or a feeling will come up. That feeling tells you how your body feels about that question right now, in this moment, not yesterday or tomorrow, but what's going on now. So you ask the question, what else is possible? How would it get better in my life than it is now? And if you get that feeling of dread, or a feeling of depression, or a feeling of frustration, or whatever the feeling is, that tells you what the emotional reaction of the body is based on memory patterns. Because that's what the body does, is play memory patterns in reaction to what we might be thinking and doing. So if you go to make your list, you start to say, okay, what would I like to change in my life? And you try to write something down, and you can't do it, and you feel frustrated because you can't think of anything. Or you go to write it down and you feel depressed because your life is a mess and this is never going to change. And you even ask the question, what else is possible? How does it get better than this? And you still feel depressed. That's telling you that there are hidden programs running in your unconscious based on past stress experiences that are keeping you locked in a pattern that frustrates you from actually making changes. So what we're going to be showing you in the weeks to come is some of the tools and techniques that you can use to change that. And we're going to start with a really simple one this evening. So let's say that you go to make your list, and you go to write something down, and you feel frustrated. All right? So then you can just, you ask, what else is possible? How would I feel even better? And you just feel even more frustrated. All right, well, remember the grizzly bear. If you were running from the bear, your body would be acting a certain way. So let's just act the opposite. Let's take a deep breath, let it out nice and slow, and then give ourselves a chance to choose something different. Is there anything in your life that you are happy about? Anything in your life that, even something simple like playing with a kitten or getting a bouquet of flowers, that you normally feel pretty good about when you get something like that? So what you'll do is you'll ask the question, what else is possible? Take a breath, let it out slow, and then deliberately switch the channel over to something that you normally feel good about. And notice that that feels a little better. Then you can go back to the original feeling of frustration or depression or upset, whatever it might be, and then you just repeat the process. What else is possible? How is it going to get better than that? And notice how you feel. And if you feel frustrated or if you feel upset, that's okay. Just notice the feeling, and then take that breath, let it out slow, and focus for a moment on something that allows you to feel better about yourself or about life. And there are certain things like holding a newborn baby, or playing with a kitten, or getting some flowers, or a beautiful sunset, or a person we really care about, that causes the body to react differently. Now, why is this so powerful? And by the way, you just repeat that over and over until the original feeling starts to change. It's so powerful because if you're really running from a bear, would you be trying to change the feeling of panic to get away from the bear? No. Your body knows that. And if you take a nice calm breath and you deliberately shift, either noticing the five things like we mentioned earlier, or even better, notice something that a memory or a thought that causes you to feel happy or grateful, then what you're doing is you're telling the body in a very powerful way, I'm not being chased by the grizzly bear right now. You don't have to keep the grizzly bear program running. It's okay to let up on that one. It's okay to shift to something that's more calming, more relaxing, more joyful. And where do we get creative? Where do we see possibilities for change and choice? It's when we're playing, when we're calm, when we're relaxed, when we're having a good time. So the more you can shift your body, even those hidden, non-cognitive, non-conscious programs that are running, telling us that life is terrible and we've got to keep running from the bear or we're going to die, the more you can shift away from those towards the things that are more enjoyable, just that choice to shift to that feeling is enough to help the body tone down those old programs. And when you tone them down, it creates space where you're able to make more choices, think of more things, more possibilities, and actually begin to see a way that you might be able to change some of these things in your life. So again, to review, one of the first steps in the coaching process is for you to learn for yourself or choose for yourself what is it you'd like to change. Would you like some change in your life? And actually make a list. What are the things you'd like to change? You can also do a playful exercise called, if I had $100 million a year and perfect health and lots of time, what would I be doing with all those resources? And fill a whole page with ideas. And the purpose of that is, again, just to playfully create an atmosphere of choosing, an atmosphere where possibilities pop into your head. That, in turn, when you go back to your list, the list of what you actually think you'd like to change in your life, it makes it so much easier. But let's say you go to start that list and you're still getting stuck. You feel frustrated. You feel unhappy. You feel like this is never going to work because nothing in my life can change. Then it's time to take a breath, let it out slow, and ask a question. But it's an open-ended question that expands possibilities. A question such as, well, what else would be possible here? What would it take for me to feel better about this? How does it get better than this? And again, you're not looking for a specific answer. You're just looking to expand awareness of possibilities. And so, to help the body do that, then take another breath, let it out slow, focus on something that feels happy, something you enjoy, something that always makes you smile, and let the body know that, you know what, you really don't have to pay attention to busy events right now, because I'm going to pay attention to this kitten chasing the ball of strength. I like that. It's funny. It makes me laugh. I feel good. And when you laugh and feel good, even a little bit, it opens up space for more possibilities. And it will help you in creating your list. So, first step, what kind of change would you like? What would you like to change in your life? And when you come up with those things, you write them down. If you're having a hard time with that list, then do the $100 million, lots of health, lots of possibilities exercise. just to open up your awareness of possibilities. And if you're going to do the list and you're still having some issues, then take a deep breath, let it out slow, and ask a question. What would make this easy? What would allow for more possibilities in my life? You don't have to answer that question. It's just to encourage your body to be more aware of possibilities. Then take another breath, let it out slow, and focus on something you really enjoy. And now, your body will have the opportunity to tone down the group reserve routines. Those memorized patterns, those survival coping patterns, are the ones that lead to addiction and compulsive behavior. They're also the ones that make you feel trapped, like you don't have choices, and you can't make choices, and you can't change things in your life. So this is all about how we start. Now, once you get to it, and you've actually got a list of things that you'd like to change, then the next step, which we will talk again about it in the future, is to start looking at priorities and start splitting that list into three columns. The things that you kind of like to see those change. The ones that you kind of feel are sort of important, and yeah, I'd like to definitely want to change that. And then those that you feel are really, really important. Those are the changes that would make a major shift in your happiness and your health and your life for both you and your family. And then in the future, you start working our way through those. So this is a great way to start your coaching process, and it's a coaching process where you're really coaching yourself. And remember, coaching isn't about doing it for somebody. Coaching isn't even really about teaching somebody to do it or telling them what to do. Coaching is about helping you, helping yourself or someone else to get clarity so that they can make their own decisions and motivate themselves internally to do whatever they'd like to do to change their life. What if there was nothing wrong with you, which is the basic premise of coaching, and all you needed to do was just make better choices and just be able to help yourself so that you could follow through on those choices better? That's what coaching is all about. Well, we've enjoyed having you all on the call tonight. Thank you very, very much. This will be posted on DanielJBrandt, LLC.com, which is at the bottom of the invitation page that you got, and it will be posted on the site so you can listen again if you'd like. And feel free to contact us through the site with any questions that you have. And we'll be back next week at this same time with another call to continue the discussion of would you like some change in your life. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye now.